Wind Down with Jana Kramer and Michael Kaufman, an iHeartRadio podcast.
So something happened to me the other day in the parking lot that I want to bring up.
Oh, tell me more.
It's parking lot etiquette.
Parking lot etiquette. Oh, I know one of them. The, what's those things called? Oh, the shopping carts.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't return your cart to
the buggy, as some people would say in parts of the country.
Buggy?
Oh, yeah. That's like a southern thing.
Oh, I've never heard that before. Okay, so what's your thing?
Well, first of all, we can touch on that.
I'm good.
Because you're that one.
It's so annoying. I put them away now. It's so frustrating.
I hate when people don't put away the shopping carts in the designated spots. When they just leave them in an empty parking space, that drives me insane.
Well.
And so I've conditioned Jana to start walking back the shopping cart, because before she'd be like, eh.
It's hard with kids, though. You know?
That's why I either put them in the car and then do it.
Oh, great. So then you leave the kids in the car.
Well, here's the thing. I always park close to one of those. Like the spot next to it, or two spots, or across from it.
I don't know what it is. It's just, I will tell you, the other day, though, when I was at Whole Foods, I was putting my cart away, and I took the cart from the older lady who was also bringing it that way.
Look at you. Good Samaritan.
I just kind of shook my head. I was like, oh, this just feels weird.
This is not who I am. But no, so I was leaving Home Depot, which I feel like Home Depot parking lots are way too tight for
the trucks that should be there.
Yeah, the trucks that are there and the reasoning that people are going there. And it's funny because I parked to the far end to where like the lumber exit is, because I'm going to get lumber for the playhouse thing that I'm building. And so it's a lot of trucks like in this section that I'm parked. I have, you know, a bunch of wood in the back. So I don't have my backup camera, which we've all gotten a little dependent on.
Oh, 1,000%.
Right. Like, who even looks in their mirrors anymore? I still try to, but still. So I'm backing up, and my camera's like beeping at me because it's facing the ground because my tailgate's down.
Mm.
So I can't really see completely, and I give a little love tap to the truck behind me in another spot.
Whoops.
Whoops. And I was like, shit, did I just hit a car? So I pulled up a little bit, got out and looked. I mean, nothing. It was literally a love tap. No scratch, nothing.
But like, really though?
Oh, really?
Like, not something like, it could be buffed out.
Let me lick my finger and rub it out a little bit.
Grab a Sharpie from the car.
Well, it was one of those two where like, in case someone saw me, I was like, almost like acting out that it was okay. Like, I wish people could see me. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it's good. Like, okay, everything's okay. Like, just pretending that someone was looking at me. And I drove away. But then I was like, leaving. I was like, man, should I still left a note? Should I have still said,
hey, I love tapped your car, but it was all good. XOXO.
Yeah.
Mike.
Holler at your boy, Mike. No, part of me like felt still a little guilty. Like, maybe I still sort of left a note. But even
what would you have said? Like, to whom it may concern? To the black, I don't know.
GMC.
GMC. Or Ford GMC. Those are two different cars. Like, yeah, what would you have said?
I don't know. I don't even know. I just felt a little bit of that guilt. And I'm like, man, what was...
But guilt for what? Because it did nothing. You didn't hurt anything.
I know, but still. I like back.
You felt like
car.
You violated their car?
A little bit. A little bit. I don't know. I mean, I know I didn't do anything wrong, but still, it's one of those things, like, to what extent, obviously, if there's any damage, even a scratch, I would have been straight up and been like, and written on something and left for him, hey, I did this, here's my name and number, give me a call. And I would have given a fake phone number.
No, you would not.
I'm just kidding.
But you feel guilty because...
Because I wasn't able to tell the person. And like, I wish I could have like told them. Be like, hey man, or woman, I love tapped your truck. My bad. It's all good. I don't know. What are you struggling with?
I'm struggling with the fact that if you left your name and number, they would find another scratch on their car and be like, no, man, you sideswiped my car.
Your head would go there. My car is totaled, actually.
Yeah, and you owe us $5 million.
Well, if someone did that, there's no way they could prove it. So I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, obviously, if you had some kind of scratch or something that happened to the car and then you left, like, I'm like, yeah, you should for sure feel guilty. That was the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. But because you didn't do anything to the car, in my mind's like, you went out and looked. That's beyond any, like, not many people would probably get out of the car and look.
True.
They'd be like, oh, shit.
I'm out.
Peace. I mean, that's what I did to my grandparents' car. I was in high school. It was snowing. And my grandparents had just come to visit us. And I wasn't used to having a car behind me. So I'm running late. I think it was my senior year. And it was still, you know,
Jim and Marge's car.
It was 6:45. And I was running late. And so I get in the car and I just straight up reverse and floor it.
Stop.
The crunch that I heard. And I just was like, shut. And I didn't know what to do. I just like froze because, like, you know, my grandpa's so sweet, but at the same time, you don't want to mess with him either, mm-hmm, at that time of his age. Mm-hmm. And so I just went forward and turned my car and went straight to school.
What happened when they found out?
Well,
when they came out and saw their car, it's like, wait a second. How did someone hit the front of our car when we're parked in the driveway?
So I called my mom from school and I was crying and I was like, I hit grandma and grandpa's car. And they're like, oh, they know. They heard it. They saw you peel away. I was like, are they mad? Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. I just couldn't confront them. I was running late for school.
I can't even imagine.
So.
That's so funny.
But there was some damage done. I mean, it wasn't like crazy damage, but there was a good amount of damage to both cars.
That's really, really, really funny to me.
So, I mean, I eventually told. But I feel like there's a lot of people that would, if they hit, they would just go.
You're like, grandma, grandpa, I don't know what happened.
I mean, it was bad.
Are you sure? You're like, are you sure when you guys pulled in, you didn't hit the rear end of my car? They're a little senile and older. Be like, whoa, guys, easy.
Easy on the, you know, inhale or whatever, not inhale, but.
You know, it'd have been funny if I would have backed in and hit that truck and there's a scratch on my car but not on theirs, and I left a note and be like, hey man, I backed into you and I got a scratch in my car, let's exchange information.
Oh please. You still have a scratch on your car from the time that you went to McDonald's
in Los Angeles. That'll forever haunt me. McDonald's will forever haunt me.
You shouldn't have gone. Karma.
It's the big man upstairs saying stop eating McDonald's.
No, but I think to circle around, I think it's really sweet that you did, like, that you have the conscience to feel bad about that. Yeah. Even though you did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Easton, talk to me, homie.
I need more details about that about that McDonald's scratch. Did you misjudge the drive-thru? What happened?
No, it's the one that's on Sunset and Laurel Canyon.
Oh, I know it well.
Yeah, and you have to, it's like the tunnel drive-thru.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Were we in a fight that day?
Probably. That's like, I eat my feelings. Just like in
I
the book.
I just think I remember something happening. You're like, I'm going to McDonald's.
No, I was already out and about because I wouldn't have gone over the hill to go.
True.
Go to that McDonald's. I was on my way home. I was like, McDonald's. Yeah. And so I went through that tunnel of death drive-through that a motorcycle can barely fit through with my big old truck, and I'm like, you just see the remnants of scrapes all down that tunnel. I'm like, every car in here, it's like what you do. You just scrape the side or scrape the pole. Or I'm like, who built this? This is terrible. So,
Easton, what would you do if you love tapped somebody and either made a mark or made a no mark?
I mean, this is a safe space, right? We're this is a cone of honesty. I got to be honest. If there's no mark and nobody saw it, I'm jetting. I'm not doing anything. I'm going to get out of
what
there.
What if there was a mark if and there, nobody saw it? That's the thing. And nobody saw it. You know what you would do. You would leave. I see it in your face.
It depends on how big the mark was.
Oh man.
Yeah, I like to think that I would leave a note, but in reality, I probably would justify it by going like, well, you know, your car's been hit a bunch and no one left a note. This is just you putting the karma back into the world. That's messed up though, and I should be more honest. But if it was shorter than a pencil scratch, I probably would just leave if no one saw it. Yeah.
That's really funny.
Don't park near me.
No.
Don't.
Remember that one time my ex-friend came back and wrecked my car and said that.
Yeah.
He's like, you could clearly tell that he hit a pole. Like, you could for sure tell he hit a pole. And he's like, I don't know what happened. The car, somebody must have hit me. I'm like, that is a white pole.
And I was like
we were on our way to the CMAs.
Yeah. And I was kind of defending him because I still didn't know him that well.
Mm-hmm.
And Jana was lighting him up.
Lighting him.
But Jana,
I could tell he was lying. I knew him.
Jana was friends with him for like 10 years. So I was like, hey, easy. Like, you don't know. Like, let him explain. Like, easily. She's like, no, I know him. He's lying. And come to find out, he definitely did.
Yeah. It's like, the pole did not just come attack my car.
No.
Whoever was driving.
Poles have minds of their own.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no. Driving, it's so funny, though, how you do rely on that backup camera. So,
anyhow. Yeah. But I want to get, like, a 1994 Ford Escort when the kids get older and are driving, because that's, like, the car my sister drove, and that's the car I learned how to drive stick on. I want the kids to be able to drive stick and use their mirrors.
Here's a question for you. Are you the parent that gives your kids a car or makes them work for it?
You asking me?
Mm-hmm.
They got to work for it.
That is not what you said. That's not what you said.
What do you mean?
You totally changed your answer.
Here's the thing.
You're like, well, if they're playing sports and they're, you know.
I don't want to help them out with a car if they're just sitting on their butt, going to school, coming home, and that's it. If they're working or they have a lot of extracurricular activities, including sports, and so they don't have as much time to earn money for a car, whatever it may be.
They can influence online. I'm kidding.
Do a couple swipe ups. I'm willing to help them out.
Mm.
And if they are working in other ways, they just have to be a productive person.
See, that's just going to be really hard for me because I had to buy my own car. Like, I think there's something the work ethic behind paying for your own car. I'm like, okay, my parents don't have the money to get me a car. I have to work for my car, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think there's something that I think that was the moment that for me in my mind created the, oh crap, if I'm going to want something in my life, I have to work for it. You know, and I think that's where like the beginning of where my work ethic came from.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
You know what I'm curious about with Jolie and Jace is I wonder if they're going to want a driver's license when they turn 16, you know, because I've met so many kids, like parents that say like my kid's 18 and he has no intention of getting his license. Like I just feel like that sense of freedom that came with it. Like when we were 16, that mm-hmm. was everything, you know, like that's all I wanted. But now it's like, hey, man, just let me sit in my room. I got this, you know, like I can hang out with my friends here. I don't need to do that. And like my wife didn't get her driver's license until she was 26 or 27.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I taught her how to drive, which is a weird thing to be able to say.
Why didn't she want?
She just didn't see a need for it, and then at a certain point she was like kind of afraid of it. Like I don't want to be behind this, you know, 2,000-pound torpedo. And then we moved to LA, and she's like, "Oh, I got to get a license now." But yeah, and you know, and she's the same age as me, or in our 30s. But I just feel like there's going to be a whole generation of kids that are like, they have to be like pushed by their parents to get their license, because it's like, it's a pain in the ass. You guys know, like,
yeah,
but also it opens up the whole world.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, like you said, Easton, when our generation, it was like, I got my permit the first day I was eligible. I got my 14, license
9 months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whatever it was, 15 and 3 months, 16 yeah. and three. Like I was that day, mm-hmm. I was making sure I got everything I needed to. So the day I turned 16 and whatever it was, I was out. Peace. See ya. So that is interesting though, especially with ride sharing and being able to hang out with your friends, you know, with your phone and all of that. When we drove to our friend's house.
What do you guys remember the first time you drove?
Yes.
Tell me.
I got my driver's license, and then I didn't have a car at the time, so I borrowed my mom's car. And I remember her saying, the gas light's on, but you still got like 30 miles out of it before you have to go get gas. But so, and I remember like being able to pick whatever music I wanted was a really big deal. And I went and picked up my girlfriend from school, and we went to, I think we went to McDonald's, and then I brought her back to her house, and I drove home, and I was like, I can't
believe it. She was 18, I was 25. Yeah.
I was 16, and so was she. It was all above board.
I was the first of my friends to get the driver's license, and it was, you know, I bought myself a red Alero, and I told my mom, I was like, I'm just going to pick up Lisa. Like, just me and Lisa. I had 8 girls packed in my red Alero. We're going to 7-Eleven to get Slurpees. And then I probably told my mom like the truth about a few years ago. I was like, yeah, there was about 8 girls in that car. Like, we were just bumping to like NSYNC.
Oh, geez.
Getting Slurpees. It was fun.
I drove to work. Wow. I was a lifeguard because it was the summertime that I was able to get my license. And yeah, I had to go to work. I had to go to the pool. I go twirl my whistle.
Oh, memory lane. Twirl your whistle.
Did you guys get your license? Did you get it the first time? Did you have to retake the test?
Oh, first timer.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not going to lie. I think I cheated in
yeah.
How? Drivers.
Well, because like...
Oh, driver's ed. Okay.
Driver's ed. Yeah. But no, I failed a few times. Probably. It's so tricky, you know? There, it's like... They make it. They.
You never know which side you're
supposed
to be on.
They make you really second guess. Yeah, it's like, you know, they make you second guess. I've never been a good test taker. That's the thing. My teachers would always say she's really smart. She's, I don't know if they say really smart, but I was never a good test taker. I think the questions or the other options, I'm like, well, that could potentially maybe be the other.
See, maybe side. You should have been a lawyer or a politician.
I know. Okay. Super excited because today's guests, we have Clint Black and his wife, Lisa Hartman, coming on the show. Clint Black is like, oh my God. I mean, talk about high school and living the good old days. And he's one of the biggest country stars ever. So excited to have him on the show. And before that, let's take a break.
All right, we have two huge legends on our show today that we're very excited to talk to about a lot of different things. We have the one and only country superstar Clint Black, and then successful music artist and actress Miss Lisa Hartman.
Yay! Welcome to Wind Down. Woohoo! Oh my goodness, it's so nice to talk to you guys. Hey, a little fun fact.
Let's hear it.
She was supposed to play my mom.
On which
and
one?
He was supposed to be the general in Oh, Welcome Home Christmas.
Oh, right. Do you know why that didn't happen?
Because you said you didn't want to act, Clint. You told me you didn't want to act.
Well, that was one part of it was I wasn't ready to jump there. I had a lot of other things going on, including. the mask.
That's why.
Ah. Oh, so that's why.
And we couldn't say.
Yeah, we couldn't say. It was so hard. I love the role. I love the whole thing. It was so sweet, and I love the general. Oh, you're this guy. Anyway, wasn't
I was
meant
this
to be.
Guy.
Because they were going to be together.
Oh, that would have been perfect.
I'm at home now. I'm this guy at home.
Yeah, created a monster when he read that script. That's just Clint.
Well, it would have been fun, but maybe the next one we can do that. How was filming The Masked Singer?
It was awesome.
It was grueling. It was TV, you know. It was what I'm used to, you know, being out on tour, you go on your routine, and when it's time to go on, you go on. But in TV, of course, you put on an owl costume. And you start sweating immediately. You go and get in an egg that you can't walk around in, and you have to move across the stage in it. And you almost break your leg, almost fall off the stage, and then you don't. Your heart rate goes way up, and then you sing.
Just little stuff like that.
Yeah, no big deal.
Crazy. And so you're just, and of course, you know, once the taping starts, they have to turn off the AC units in the soundstage because they make a noise. And you feel it instantly, and now you're really sweating. And then the judging panel starts talking, and everybody says what they – and then Ken goes into his long diatribe. And you know, I lost 5 pounds just every time Ken talked.
That's true.
So, it was strange and different and, you know, unbelievable.
I've always wondered, do the contestants, do you guys get to pick your costume at all?
Somewhat, yeah.
Yeah, they showed the first one and we didn't love it. We said, you know, we'd really like to go more in this direction. And they came back with the second one. And
it was amazing, yeah. They sent a sketch and the Fabergé egg and the whole thing. And we fell in love instantly. And then when we got to the set, they brought us in early to see if we could, you know, so we could get used to the egg.
See if we could fit.
And we're thinking, you know, and it was really tricky. The thing opens up, right? And you go in and they zip tie you in and you've got hand brakes and these bars and the thing has a mind of its own. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to go this way and it's like.
Well, you also have stage hands who have minds of their own.
Right.
And a stage manager who wants to have control of their minds and our minds. And he's moving over here. Here we go. You feel like Fred Flintstone with his little toes in the car.
It's true.
And the little egg. You're going, there's going to be a broken ankle here.
You're human puppets at that moment.
Yeah,
it was, you know, so you suit up, you get the thing in, you know, you got to sing live, you get in the egg, you go down the lair. Now you're on your mark. You think, no, we're not on the mark. We got to get on the mark. There's all this stuff
and
coming
you can't
at you
see.
And go, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh. And then you finish and you're relieved and you hope you've done a great job or a good job. And then Ken goes off.
Right? And then there's Ken. And you're like, well, I remember when dirt was first invented.
Do you guys, so The Masked Singer has been a huge show, I think, to much surprise to a lot of the masses. And now that you guys have been on it, what do you think from an internal perspective has been the major draw to this show? Because you look at it on paper and it's kind of like, man, this isn't going to be anything. And it's been huge.
Yeah. It's positivity. Yeah. It's all positive, uplifting.
Everybody
can
watch.
It's fun for the whole family. Mm-hmm. And now with this new season where they had to adapt, you know, you've got all this animation involved. And so I think, you know, any generation can enjoy it. But there's also, you know, it's a competition and that's what we like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but did you ever think you'd be dressing up in like the costumes like this? Like 30 years ago, would you really be like, oh, wow, I'm going to be dressed up in this?
One day I want to be an owl.
Yeah.
You get the email and you look at it and you go, listen to this email. And, you know, because we're lucky, we get, you know, lots of offers to do things. Mm-hmm. And then this one comes in, and I go, oh, man, can you believe that? And then we looked at each other like, maybe we should do that. And then it was, oh, no, we're going to do this.
Meanwhile, you know? I'm pressuring you to be in my movie, and you're like, I'm about to go be an owl, but I can't tell you.
We get to lie to everyone.
Exactly, yeah.
You guys were the first duo to go on The Masked Singer. Did you think that was beneficial, like in your wheelhouse, to be like, hey, this is an advantage, or do you think it was a disadvantage?
Well, we love the idea of working together, doing something together. We've done a lot of things together, but this was definitely completely new to both of us, which was kind of fun because we were both on the same level of, you know, not knowing anything and facing the same challenges. And
there were some advantages and some disadvantages. Advantages is, we've got these harmonies we can work in, and we're two characters interacting with each other up there. Some of the disadvantages were, you know, the song selection was much harder when you're choosing mm-hmm. a duet. Can it, you know, does yeah. it fit us? Does it, you know, will the key work? The melodies work? You know, can we both hit these? Is it, you know, can
Do
we chop
like
it down?
One?
Will it still be competitive if we chop it down and lose, you know, 40%, 60% of the song? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we couldn't work the stage. We were pretty much confined to that egg. We were going to break out of it eventually, but didn't get there. So I think all in all, the advantage, disadvantage, it kind of weighs itself out and balances out.
We both felt like, you know, we were so, probably wouldn't have done it alone. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to look back, but we were just so, it was so much fun to be able to do it together and share some kind of experience like that together.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say, you know, with, you know, obviously my husband and I, we work together too, just like you guys do. And there's so much to be said. Like, you know, when I would go out and perform, I missed, you know, I like performing with my husband now and having our kind of show and doing our stuff. But there's challenges that come along with that as well, working with your spouse. So I'm curious, what is some of the biggest challenges that you guys have had to face working as a couple?
It's really hard for her when I'm always right.
Clint, you and I suffer from the same thing then. It's unbelievable.
Wow. No, you know, I don't. Maybe we're lucky. I don't know.
We're lucky,
of course. But I mean, we tend to be very in tune to the other ones. Like if I'm having a moment, he'll just back off and vice versa, right? And we have moments, you know, it's life. And all kinds of things come out. Yeah, in 30 years, I go, the cake is baked, and we know each other so well, and we're very considerate of each other. That's one thing people say, well, how do you do it? One word, consideration and communication. We talk about everything. We never leave anything unsaid. We deal with it right then.
Trust me. She never leaves anything unsaid.
Oh, Michael just told me that night, you always have to have a feeling about something. And I'm like, well, I just got to express what I'm going through.
Got something to say.
You just have to listen. I go, were you listening? And now he'll go, no.
I'll make a cup of coffee in the morning and she'll be saying something. And 3 minutes later, I say, all I said was good morning. But it makes me think of the old joke, my wife just said to me, you know, you haven't been listening to a word I've said. And I thought to myself, what a strange way to start a conversation.
That's so good.
Oh, listen, I just don't always like what comes out.
Well, yeah, that's just the way it is, though, you know?
I know.
We love each other. When it all said and done, we love each other, and you love each other, and you.
Two people building their lives together, living together. You know, you're going to. We figured it out. You look out for the things that irritate and annoy, and embarrass and frustrate, and then I just stop doing them, and that's how it works.
Watch his face.
Well, no, it's funny because like we were just having this conversation today.
I'm trying, Clint. I'm trying.
And he's like, I just feel like there's always something you got to say that I'm, you know, not doing right or doing wrong. And, you know, and he's like, and I'm kind of like,
well, just don't do them.
Well, it is how you say it, and I'm sure you're kind. You know, I mean, nobody likes
the times.
Yeah, husbands are used to hearing things put a certain way that they can adapt to, like, you stupid idiot, no! Stuff like that. You really want to hear it that way so that you can
take it in properly. Something you said early on, which I think is really golden, and we've said it to Lily, our daughter, is, and I can't remember exactly, I butcher it. You say it so well, but it's basically, if I've hurt your feelings, What is it? What's the...
You can't blame a blind man for stepping on your toes. Mm. I mean, once he's there and you let him know, and if he doesn't get off, you can start to blame him. But, you know, when I mean, in all our years of marriage, I mean, we could be out with friends. There can be a look across the room, you know, and if it makes you feel something, you know, bring it up later and just, you know, say, hey, you know, you looked at me that way. You know, I felt like, you know, I was stepping in something and, you know, you gave me that look and just like, oh, no, I was just trying to hold in a burp, you know, or whatever. Well, it could be anything. If you assume the best, then you give your mate a chance to explain what was really going on. If you assume the worst, then you can live with that sort of resentment. And Roy Rogers, when he found out we were getting married, said, I'll give you one piece of advice. Don't ever go to bed angry. And I've read, you know, psychology books, and one of them, they said the same thing in a very complicated way, which was if you have drops of mercury on a table, that this is one emotion, one event, right? And then a day later, there's another drop that comes along, and then another one a day later, a week later, another one. And mercury joins together into a single blob. So you can't separate it out days later and identify that one thing. So you have to keep clearing it off the table as you go. And if you do that, then you'll grow together and you'll start to realize, you know, it really, you know, irritates me when she burns the chicken. She knows that now. She won't do that anymore. Now there are things that we're going to do that are going to irritate each other. I don't care if you're brother and sister, if you have a business partnership, or you're a married couple, whatever. Two people can't live together without that. You can't, because you know, we're humans. So you know, you got to just kind of as you go say, you know, hey, when you did that kind of made me feel bad. Okay.
I like what you said about assuming the best instead of assuming the worst. And I think both of us are guilty at times at more of the latter, of assuming the worst, of just making up that the worst case scenario, they're thinking this or they're thinking that, or when probably more times than not, it's not the case.
Her heart, and she knows your heart, right? I will say to him, I know who you are. I know you didn't mean that, but it sounded kind of...
I know you're not stupid. You just act that way. Why do you act that way?
But you do know each other's hearts. You know what's in your heart, deep in your heart. You know what I'm saying? The most... And it's okay to say, look, I know who you are. I love you, and I know what your heart... I know you. And I know you didn't mean it that way, but it sounded a little funny and it kind of hurt my feelings, you know? And that's when you run out of the
door. Then I'll work really, really hard at coming up with an I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay, you know, we have a therapy session.
I know. How much do we owe you for this therapy session, by the way?
A lot. You know, I mean, relationships are hard, though, you know. And after 30 years, you know, we've had friends who, you know, it didn't work out. And, you know, there's never really anything you can do. You know, it's just a really, you have to work really hard at growing together and not apart. That's it.
And what do you think that to not have that happen is to just communicate and do all the things to over communicate and express your feelings?
Yeah, here comes that over communication we were talking about, Michael.
I mean, I think again, it really boils down to you know each other's hearts. That's really, it's really that simple. You know?
You have to assume the best.
Yeah, I like
we're
that.
We're both trying for the same thing, and we're both going to fail at times and fall short.
Well, what area, Clint? Could you be a better husband?
There's nothing. Nothing I can do
better. Oh boy.
Easy. I think every one of us, you know, I zone out sometimes. I don't ask enough questions.
I think that's a male female thing too.
Yeah,
really
I think male feature where we're just really not that interested in other people.
No, you want to fix it.
I get off the phone and she'll say, "Well, what's happening with your, you know, brother or whoever you're talking to?" I go,
He's in Houston. Didn't you ask?
Yeah,
that's what I know.
Yep.
No, I don't.
Sounds like our conversation. pretty much to the T. And then he gets annoyed for me asking the question. I'm like, well, what is what I do? I said, because I'm a, now we do things in our therapist is like, so he would get annoyed by my questions. So now I'm just like, I'm just a Tweety Bird asking questions because I'm not, I'm just curious. I'm genuinely just curious. I'm not testing you. I'm not trying to find it. I'm just curious. I'm a very curious person. I like to ask questions.
Yep. I'm the same exact way. No BS.
So I hand her a little piece of paper with the person's phone number on it.
And I think it's a female thing. Women want to talk about it, work through it, understand it, analyze it, sometimes, la la. And men just want to fix it and move on, you know? And I think once you both, I'm going to cry. I think you once you both, I'm serious. I think once you both accept that, you know, I'm crying for many reasons. I'm not crying. Okay, I feel like I want to cry.
No sleep. It's no sleep.
But it's no, it's true. I mean, I think once you accept that, it makes it so much easier. I think that's the emotion that's coming over me now. Once you accept that that's who, and that's a beautiful thing. That's a great thing mm-hmm. because you're going to need her to ask those questions about something many times in your life. And he's, and you're going to need him vice versa for us to go, okay.
Yeah, she'll say
and,
things
and
like
call me or call one of your girlfriends, right? And you'll go, geez, rah, rah, rah. It's that's gonna you're gonna get to that place, and then you're gonna do the other thing too.
She'll save your life by asking one day, "Is it? Do you think you should have the gas can that close to the fire pit?"
Exactly.
Well, no, maybe, maybe not. You know, but the other thing, you know, that you know, we know ourselves now, you know, and so. You know, if she starts with a bunch of questions, you know, I can just tell her I'm really tired. You have to ask me, and we can laugh about it.
And I go away.
You can't ask me now, you know. And so we make light of it. And you know, our daughter, when you know, we'd be lecturing her, and she'd just be, oh God. And I said, you know, we do this because we love you. You're welcome. So now all I have to say is, you're welcome, and it turns her. She relates it back to the whole point of it, you know. So it's something that we all deal with, and it's sort of accepting that it's going to happen, and that it and that you have to work it out. It's great to hear, you know, you guys have a therapist. We have an old friend who's just a really wise guy when it comes to parenting, and we can call him up. And he's like a therapist, and you just, you know, say, hey, what'd you go? When my kids were 13, they were really selfish. Yours is too. That's it, you know. And so you kind of get a different perspective.
I love it.
Love it. Well, Clint and Lisa, we know you have a full day of stuff to do. We really appreciate it. We can probably cancel our couple's therapy session tomorrow because of you guys.
I think we still need it.
I'm just going to keep thinking when Clint was like, man, we just don't like other people all that much. I love that.
Hey, enjoy yourselves. And I said, well, I always enjoy myself. The other people.
That's right. 5 years.
5 years.
Oh, good for you.
Thank you. Yeah.
5 years, 2 kids, and just a happy love story.
That's right. That's us. Yes, ma'am.
2 kids, yeah.
How old?
5 and 2.
Oh, come on. You know what the secret is, right, to staying married?
Let's see what?
Don't get divorced.
Oh, my God.
Don't get divorced?
Don't get divorced. That's it. Simple as that, honey.
That's the secret. All it is.
Because you make it so easy.
We got this, boo. We got this.
Well, we have the song for you guys. It's a new duet I wrote for us. I've done so many interviews. I don't know if I mentioned it earlier.
No, you didn't.
No.
So I wrote a new duet because we had so much fun on the Mask Singer. And it starts off with, I can tell you how the story never ends.
Aww. Oh, that's awesome.
When is it coming out?
It's available for saving now, but it starts streaming on December 3rd. And on the 2nd, we're doing a live concert at the Ryman streaming.
Oh, yay.
We'll do our new duet there. It's $9.99. Go to clintblack.com. You get the Ginsu knives with it. Perfect. And then that'll be our shows there on December 2nd. But you can go ahead and start getting there. Some in-person tickets, but you know how that's working, mm-hmm. right?
I love it. Well, we'll see you there. Thank you, everyone. Go to clintblack.com and get the new song duet. Love you guys so much. Thank you, and let's hang soon.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
See you guys. See ya. That's it.
Clint Black, A Better Man.
Oh, Better Man. Come on. So good.
Oh, it's just too good. If I would have told like my high school self I would be interviewing Clint Black.
I know.
His wife, like, come on.
Just yucking it up.
I'm like, let's have
Clint.
Clint. Let's have coffee.
They're definitely ones that I would
hang out with.
Yeah. And like you said, like, I would love to just sit and have a coffee with Clint and just have him tell me stories.
Yeah. And same Papa. With his wife. Me and Lisa can just like ask each other questions.
Like, you, so, two, Lisa. You two can be in one room just chirping away. Clint and I will be in the other room just not saying a word.
And talking about yourselves and not saying a word.
I'm great. How are you? I'm great. All right. I don't like other people. Me either. That was hilarious to me.
Oh. Hey, Easton, do we have any emails?
All right. This is from Sydney. My husband and I got married in June. We've been together for a little over 3 years. He has a best friend who's a woman, and it's always been a little weird to me, but I've just dealt with it. I don't usually go through his phone, but I did the other day because it just happened to be right there. Her grandma passed away, and he was saying his condolences. He said he's there for her 24/7, that he loves her, and he continued to check up on her over the next few days. She's married, and I don't think there's anything to be worried about, but isn't that her husband's job to be there for her 24/7? I talked with my husband about boundaries and asked if he could just include me in the conversations going forward and no private messaging. He didn't give me a direct answer, but said he's going to need to tell her everything that happened now so she doesn't think he's an a-hole. To me, that validates that he puts her feelings before mine. Is that how you see it, or am I being insensitive?
This is an interesting question. But no, I don't think what she's asking is insensitive. I think it's appropriate just to be included in those messages. And I think if he, you know, ultimately what matters are her feelings over his friends, but that doesn't mean he has to undermine his friend's feelings and just text her and be like, hey, I mean, but that's hard too, because if he texts his friend and says, hey, just, you know, for my wife, for Sydney to feel more comfortable, I'm just going to include the three of us in a group chat. And then would Sydney feel weird that he said that to her? Would the friend feel awkward because now it's like this thing? Because it's mentioned, now it's a thing. You know what I mean? Like turning something, nothing into something.
That's a hard one. The best friend thing's tough.
It is.
Especially with the opposite sex, just because you have to protect your other spouse. Like, you have to protect your spouse, but you still have that friendship. But if it's of the opposite sex, you can definitely get jealous about that. If you're, now I think if it's, you know, his grandma passing away and you've always been fine with it before, then I think there isn't anything fishy.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's just kind of out of the blue and he continues to text her, then I think a few more check-ins, like, hey, you good? Like, I know Mike would do the same if any of our friends, people passed away, like checking on you, making sure you're good. But
right.
Beyond that kind of communication, I don't, you know, if it becomes more intense, then I would have stronger feelings about it. But because it was a best friend before, you know, it is her grandma, but I can totally see you being like, hey, can I just see the messages so I feel more comfortable? I think that'd be fine to ask.
Yeah, I would.
And it is her husband's job to console, but I think a lot of people find comfort in friends too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it bothers you, I would just be like, hey, for some reason, this is coming up for me and I'm starting to get like jealous and feels a little weird. So do you mind if I just look at your phone or see the messages? And
I think that's a better compromise than being included.
Yeah, I don't like the included thing. Just feels, that rubs me weird.
That's what I'm saying.
Like that feels uncomfortable.
Then you're taking nothing and turning it into something.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Because then the friend might feel awkward around Sydney and her husband. And then it's just like this, there's this tension in the air that just.
But you would think that they would be like friends though, all of them.
Right. That's what they probably are. maybe not like super close. Maybe they geographically they live in different areas, but.
Easton, what were you going to say?
What about this though? What if like the wife or Sydney starts the group text between the three and says like, you know, so-and-so told me about your loss. I'm so sorry to hear that. Like, you know, we're here for you if you need anything. And like starts that message that way, not by like announcing like, by the way, I'm going to be.
I like that.
Monitoring. Yeah, because I was thinking like my wife and I, we have group texts with almost all of our friends just because. So we're not doubling up on sending the same like dumb picture to, you know, to everyone. So
we're the same way.
Yeah. And, you know, and it does, it's not like neither of us have anything to hide or anything, but it does make it just easy to see the information that's being exchanged. And you know, I'm not saying that like they need to be like the three of them need to be the best of friends, but I think that might open up that idea of having like access to everything without it being this big announcement, like that there's trust being broken or something like that. So I don't know.
I love that. And it kind of makes her feel included in it too, while also offering her condolences, I'm sure. And so, yeah, I love that.
So,
and if he's weird about that, then I would be like, ooh, red flag.
So that's a great idea. The only obstacle I foresee is, okay, that's great. But then maybe the best friend just after this passes goes back to texting just him. Because they're best friends. And so is it Sydney's husband's responsibility to be like, hey, text me in the chat? Because then you're dealt with the same obstacle. You know what I mean? So now if the best friend continues to text in the chain with Sydney and the husband, then that's great. But there is that obstacle where if she doesn't. And I will say, if I was the best friend's husband, like if you were going to a male friend, like you have more male friends than I have female friends. Like any of my female friends are your friends. Mm-hmm. So if you went to a male friend of yours and you were confiding in him about things that you haven't confided in me, I'd be upset.
Yeah.
You know?
And I would be too if you did the same.
Right. Now it's if you're doing it also, that's fine. But if you're saying things that you haven't told me, then yeah.
Tricky one.
So hope that helps, Sydney. All right, well, that was an awesome show and great email to end it with. So
why don't you give someone a nice little love tap and a little note? That's our challenge for the week. Love tap somebody on the butt and leave them a note.
All right, see you next week.